Hey, welcome to Our Altered World. If you've been feeling overwhelmed by the giant that is climate change, you're not alone. I'm Neil, and here we celebrate the inspiring work of individuals and organizations making real positive strides that you may not have heard about. My hope is for our conversations here to make you feel inspired and reconnected to our planet. And with that said, I would love to introduce Ashley Lutz-Nelson from Snow Leopard Conservancy.
Hi, Neil. Thank you so much for having me today on Our Altered World. It's so important to instill hope this time in the world. So thank you so much for offering this opportunity for us to speak about snow leopards and conservation.
Thank you so much for joining us, Ashley, and for your beautiful opening words. I would love for you to tell our listeners a bit about yourself. How did you first become interested in snow leopard conservation? And what brought you to work for Snow Leopard Conservancy?
Yeah, it's been a wild journey, Neil. I started out on the veterinary and animal welfare side, working at my father's veterinary practice when I was little, and ended up I was a zoologist after college and working at Busch Gardens Tampa and working as a zoologist there with the big cats and the great apes and rhinos and other carnivores and all these amazing majestic species to ensure that they had optimal care and well-being in a managed setting. And while I was there, I really became inspired to, because of the individuals I was working with, I fell in love with each of these amazing cats and animals and decided to get more involved in community-based conservation because I really love people as well. And I really wanted to understand the challenges that these animals face in the wild. And so I ended up going to London for graduate school at Zoological Society of London and Royal Veterinary College. And it was this really neat master's degree in conservation health. And so really working on conservation of animals in the wild and bringing everybody together that's working to save these species from the zoological side and the field side and really making sure that we can ensure a future for these amazing animals. And so I was the assistant curator of carnivores at San Francisco Zoo afterwards, which brought me to San Francisco. And I was actually at the Wildlife Conservation Network Expo here in San Francisco, and I met the founders of Snow Leopard Conservancy. And so I was working with the snow leopards, 7 amazing cats at the zoo at the time. And then we started collaborating on projects, including a One Health project and important research that would benefit the snow leopards in the wild. And our founders were looking for somebody to lead the organization into its next chapter as they retired. And so it ended up being a wonderful fit. I felt extremely connected to the organization's values and all of the incredible work they were doing to protect snow leopards by working with mountain communities in the wild to promote coexistence. And I moved over to the organization in 2020. What a time to join and learn all of, you know, conservation. But I was able to work with our partners online and then start heading out to the field in 2022 to work with them directly. And so it's been an honor to work with this extraordinary organization and lead it forward into its next chapter for this amazing cat.
What a incredible, both diverse and expansive journey that you've had in the field of conservation. And I also didn't know that about the San Francisco Zoo having so many snow leopards. But that's an interesting point for our listeners. If you're ever in San Francisco, you can go to see many of their snow leopards at the zoo. The name Snow Leopard Conservancy is quite descriptive. How would you summarize your mission and approach to someone who's new to your work?
Sure. So essentially, we save the lives of snow leopards. We do this through holistic, community-led conservation and stewardship. And so this has been our core mission since the organization was created in 2000. And so our approach is that we partner with local conservationists. These are community mobilizers living in the high mountains to lead their communities toward coexistence with snow leopards and other predators. And so we partner with mountain communities themselves. We partner with local organizations, national, global organizations to achieve this. And so we essentially invest in solutions that save the lives of snow leopards from the consequence of human-wildlife conflict to prevent retaliatory killings. And we do this by empowering traditional indigenous knowledge and also Western science to come up with solutions that protect both the community's livelihoods and well-being so that they can be the guardians of the future.
Beautiful. I think that's how a lot of conservation should really be moving forward, really utilizing local and traditional knowledge of the species of these environments and integrating it into the growing methodology that is science, that is learning, machine learning, conservation learning. So I'm so excited to hear that Snow Leopard Conservancy has been doing that. You mentioned briefly that you met the founders at the WCN Expo and that they were brought you on as they were looking to transition out or away for their roles in the company. I would love for you to kind of dive into what inspired their founding of the Conservancy and how has the strategy or the NGO evolved since then?
Yes. So our founders, Dr. Rodney Jackson and Darla Hillard, were the first individuals to ever study snow leopards in the early 1980s. This all started because Dr. Rodney Jackson was over here at Berkeley, UC Berkeley, finishing his graduate program and read the book The Snow Leopard by Peter Matheson, which followed Dr. George Schaller in his search of blue sheep, which are the main ungulate prey for snow leopards in the Himalayas. And so the book follows George Schaller, and Peter Matheson never ends up getting to see a snow leopard, but George Schaller does at the very end of the book. And so this book set Rodney on a path to go to the Himalayas to try to photograph this cat. And so this is the most elusive cat in the whole world. It was only the first picture ever taken was in the snow leopard.
I find that's a lot of people's introduction into conservation. Photography tends to be a massive bridge there. It's lovely to hear that something where a photographic bridge has led to such an incredible organization being formed.
Yes, it absolutely is. Photographers get into, you know, the patience that it requires and trekking and getting to these remote places to monitor the wildlife is so insightful to, you know, see the photographs and understand animal behavior. So Dr. Jackson's from South Africa, and so he was planning to head back there. But what he found, he didn't actually end up seeing a snow leopard, like snow leopard, when he was in the high mountains. But what he found was that local herding communities were actually killing the cats over retaliatory, out of retaliation because of livestock depredation. And so these are communities for centuries that have coexisted with snow leopards. And it's part of their nature, you know, as Tibetan Buddhists or Hindus to be interconnected and interdependent with the natural world. However, they're living in the high remote mountains with very little resources, and they rely on their animals for animal husbandry for their primary livelihoods. And so when a snow leopard or other predators kill their domestic animals, often they're resorted to killing these predators just to reduce the threat to their own survival. And so he came back to Berkeley and with the help of Darla wrote a Role Expert Enterprise grant to study snow leopards in Nepal, and they got it. And so they went over for 4 years and did the first radio tracking studies and spent 4 years there in the high Himalayas learning about this amazing cat and working with local communities there. And so this landed the National Geographic edition in 1986, and it was the first ever scientific information that was published on the species, on diet, behavior, range, all of this really critical information, which really set forth a pathway for four decades of conservation efforts now for this species.
Isn't that such a beautiful journey to start from reading a book to having all this incredible, impactful work taking place? I definitely want to touch back onto the human and snow leopard conflict that you mentioned just briefly there, but I want to dive into how climate change is affecting snow leopard habitats, particularly in these high altitude regions that they're located in. What steps is SLC, if you don't mind me referring to you guys as that, moving forward, taking to address these impacts?
Yes, indeed. So the high mountains are seeing some of the initial effects of climate change, even before other ecosystems. We're seeing land degradation, so a difference in the abundance of grass that's growing for wild ungulates. We're seeing stochastic climate events, so winters are lasting longer, they're less predictable for crops. There's the land's becoming more barren, and which leads to more landslides, which is more dangerous. The glaciers are melting, which we're seeing these major devastating flood incidents in the valleys and the communities that are heavily affected downstream. And so we're seeing a lot of major changes up in the high mountains, which we are monitoring. And so we do work with the local communities on adaptations that they can do. Mm-hmm. To adapt as well with the changing climate. And so these are local, local solutions for ensuring that they have the water and that they have food security, and also ensuring that they have food grown for their animals that can last throughout the winter time in case the winter goes long. And, you know, we also work at the national and global levels as well on climate action to ensure that we're working together with sustainable development organizations to align on activities that are there beneficial for people, animals, and the environment.
Incredible. With your mention of the High Himalayas, I know that the snow leopard range is quite vast and it spreads through many countries. Could you just briefly mention what countries you guys operate out of within the range and the expansive range that the snow leopards do frequent?
Of course. Yes, snow leopards are incredibly adaptable. So living up in the high Altai Mountains in the north, which borders Russia, Mongolia, Kyrgyzstan, to the Pamiri Mountains in Tajikistan, down south through the Karakoram and Gilgit-Baltistan and Pakistan, and then into the Himalaya. So snow leopards have a wide range and are very adaptable, from living in the Gobi Desert, you know, at just 6,000 feet in Mongolia, to the peaks of the Himalaya at about 19,000 feet. And so they are incredibly adaptable. And so we do work across the range in collaboration with the Global Snow Leopard Ecosystem Protection Program. And so that's ensuring transboundary cooperation, because these species know no boundaries in terms of the national borders, unless there's a border fence, right? And so we all work together. But our current programs are based right now, and we have a heavy focus in Nepal. We have most of our partners are based in Nepal, working in different snow leopard landscapes. And we also work in Pakistan, in the Gilgit-Baltistan region, and then also in Central Asia, in Mongolia, in Kyrgyzstan, and Tajikistan. But historically, we've worked in Bhutan, China, and other snow leopard countries as well. Those are currently the countries where we're currently at.
Fantastic. You've got a massively wide scope there, and they're all within different climatic and altitude regions as well. On that note, we're going to take our first break to hear from our station sponsors, and we'll be back soon.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage, or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Our Altered World. I'm here with Ashley Lutz-Nelson from the Snow Leopard Conservancy. We just left off of talking about the regional the regional outposts that SLC works out of, both throughout the Himalayan region and the wider Asiatic region. Ashley, I would love for us to talk about the methods that SLC are using, relating back to the earlier mention of human and snow leopard conflicts. Can you explain how these reduce the human snow leopard conflicts as well as aid in the wider conservation work?
Yes, so what we call predator-proof corrals have been, they have lots of different names, livestock enclosure, anything. Yeah. And so we work with local communities to develop these. And so they're incorporated with the design. So they get to add their input on how they see the design based on what materials they have available in their communities. You know, these alpine communities are far above the tree line. And so
So these are all individually different then?
Yes, they're all individually tailored. Yeah. So
interesting.
Traditional livestock enclosures up in the high mountains are typically low stone-walled mason exterior. And so this actually makes it easier for the snow leopards to jump in into those unprotected corrals. And unfortunately, what happens when the snow leopards jump into the corrals, unlike when they'd be up on the high mountain ridge hunting a herd of blue sheep, when they hunt a wild herd, they target one specific animal in the herd, usually the weakest or, you know, a young or injured animal, and they'll stalk for hours before they charge and pounce. So they'll spend hours stalking. But what happens is when they jump into an enclosure, the livestock are not able to disperse like a wild herd would. In a wild hunt, snow leopards would never be able to kill more than one animal at a time because they target one, they chase after, and then they make the kill. But in a traditional low stone walled enclosure, they jump in, and what they'll actually do is they'll do what's called a surplus killing. And so they'll actually kill every single goat or sheep or yak, calf in that enclosure until they start eating. And so this is completely devastating to the herders. It's like wiping out their life savings in one night. And so when they come in the next day, often the snow leopard is exhausted and still stuck in the corral. And at that point, is very open for retaliation with somebody that is very distraught. And so these enclosures protect the animals so that the snow leopards can't get in, and then it in turn keeps them safe as well.
It's a win for win, really.
It is. And so every design is very different. And so we work with the communities on that design. And so it's there's ownership from the beginning, and then they also contribute what they can to the building. And so often we'll be able to provide the solution of, well, we can add galvanized mesh to the top of this. Is that something that you would like? And then usually the answer is yes. And then we work with them on building the corral there in their community based on the design that's developed with them.
Wow, that is incredible. Beyond climate and these human snow leopard conflicts, what are the most pressing threats, would you say, to snow leopards today? And how are you guys going about tackling those?
Ooh, yeah, that's a great question, Neil. There are a lot. You know, our focus really is, you know, working with the local communities on preventing retaliatory killings. That is one mm-hmm. of the major threats that we can work with the communities on preventing, in turn, you know, improves their well-being as well.
Finding an area where, you know, okay, we can be extremely useful, both upskilling and really using our resources to the best advantage. I definitely see that.
Yes, and it's a proven technique that is very successful in helping communities move toward not only towards coexistence, but also guardianship, which is the ultimate goal. And so threats that we address are lack of knowledge about the species' importance or sacredness to indigenous communities that live among them. And so we have education opportunities at all different age levels. So those are for the youth. We have a snow leopard curriculum that's incorporated so kids can learn about snow leopard ecology and other animals and the web of life and ecosystem and stewardship. And we also work with the herders as well. So developing different livelihood opportunities like ecotourism and other livelihoods that are directly economically related to the preservation of wildlife in their homeland. And also one of the other big threats that we're working on is disease mitigation. So up in the high mountains, there is a lack of veterinary resources often in these communities, not unlike our countries in these remote areas. And so they're very, domestic animals are very susceptible to domestic or to transmissible diseases, which can be passed along to people and be a public health crisis, as well as be fatal to endangered snow leopards and other wildlife. And so those are just a few examples of threats that we're addressing in the immediate.
Amazing. You have touched upon so much there that I really am excited to find out so much more about. You spoke just briefly there regarding veterinary science, diseases, as well as working with the communities on these corrals. I want to know, with this research and radio tracking, for example, with the snow leopards and these genetic studies, what surprising insights have these revealed, both about snow leopard behavior and potentially how it's changing, or stuff that we may not have known about before that we can then attribute towards the education factors?
Yes, Rodney and Darla's first study used radio tracking technology, radio collaring and tracking technology in the early 80s. And so this was the best technology at the time. But now, of course, there's satellite telemetry that can ping people on their phones with snow leopard movement. So back in their time, and even up until about 15 years ago, and still to this day in a lot of the areas, the camera traps that were used to remotely monitor these species have to be changed out. The batteries have to be changed out. The SD cards need to be collected. And so you have
constantly
to
running just hours and hours of footage. Can someone get me a 100 terabyte SD card, please? It needs to last.
It's so much work. And so getting to these places in the wintertime to collect the SD cards is a real challenge. So the technology has come a very long way, where now there are satellite telemetry that can ping phones on snow leopard movement. And also, you know, the use of genetics has been really revolutionary in our work. Like, for example, we're able to understand diet and understand which ungulates and which prey species snow leopards are focused on in certain areas based on availability, abundance. And also, it's really given us an insight into how much of a percentage of livestock or domestic animals are in the snow leopard's diets in these individuals, because they're able to be individually ID'd with the genetics more. And you can do it with camera tracking and IDing as well, but it's really effective to do it with genetic sampling. And so it's given us wonderful insights into their behavior and their diet, which can also advise us in conservation in those areas.
Incredible. And off the back of that, how are you guys utilizing the data from these studies, these camera traps, the satellite tracking? How is the data being utilized for conservation?
Yeah, so for at least 20 years now, we've really been more focused on non-invasive monitoring techniques. Mm-hmm. So early radio collaring was very important to understand movement patterns and behavior and range. But as an organization, we've really decided to focus more on non-invasive techniques. And so that can include genetic sampling through scat collection and analysis, also remote camera trap. And so that can give us really helpful insights into snow leopard behavior. And also we're part of the PAWS initiative, which is the population assessment of the world's snow leopards. And so we're doing this as part of the Snow Leopard Network, which is a broader group of conservationists and researchers and practitioners all working together for this species. And so we are trying to assist in the census, the range-wide census, to understand where the population truly is at, because right now we just have a best estimate of
vague figures
between 4,000 and 7,000, but we are one country by one. They are getting the updated information on how many snow leopards. However, we do utilize the camera trapping as well to assess the level of coexistence in the area. So for example, in Pakistan, if we are monitoring a mother and her sub-adult cubs, and they're thriving and the communities are thriving, and there's a healthy prey base of ungulates, and the communities are accepting their presence and not harming them, and everything is going okay, we also see that as a success measure. And so the technology
is
very useful, especially this new AI camera trap we're working on now. We'll be able to detect a snow leopard and send a signal to a herder's phone that will allow them to know if the snow leopard's in the area and to be more vigilant over their herds. And we're also trying to add a fox light predator deterrent to it, or a sound that will deter the snow leopards from even coming into the village. So we're always thinking of new
three-pronged
and ideas that will take the applied research one step forward to make it really practical for conservation efforts.
Amazing. I'm definitely going to touch back on that AI point. But all of this got me thinking, for people here who are listening and are really invigorated and inspired by the work that you're doing, how can they help? What actionable steps can listeners or members of the public take to support SLC?
Yeah, everybody can play a role in conservation. You know, conservation really starts in our own backyards. And it's from actions of reducing our own carbon footprint to sharing the knowledge that we have with our friends and family and colleagues. Everyone can be an advocate for snow leopards. And it's all interconnected.
Learning more on the radio.
Yes, learning as much as you can and sharing that knowledge. And also, it's, you know, with climate change, you know, reducing our carbon footprints in the ways that we can. But also, you know, we have supporting local conservation groups with ecotourism for all those adventurous listeners out there. We have responsible ecotourism expeditions that people can go that benefit, go try to see snow leopards in the wild that benefit the communities directly. And so there's lots of different ways to get involved, whatever skills you have and want to offer the world, and conservation needs you.
Beautifully said. We have spoken a lot about the blend of traditional knowledge and modern science that SLC have really been advocating for and be doing incredible work in all of these regional communities. How do you think this community-led conservation has improved outcomes for snow leopards? I know you mentioned with their safety, with the corrals, but where do you hope to expand this approach? And this is kind of one of where I would love to tie back in that AI work, because I've had many different NGOs that have started to integrate this incredible AI, machine learning and tracking into their conservation and seen their success rates explode with what they wanted to achieve maybe within years happen within months.
Yeah, so our approach really is about blending Western science with traditional ecological knowledge. And with that, you know, we want to empower the communities that we're working with to have the tools that they need to lead their communities toward coexistence. And so every community is very different. They vary in beliefs and traditions and customs, one valley to the next in the mountains. And that's what makes
and communities. And on that, how do you navigate that? Because that must be so interesting. You could walk effectively what would be down the street or down the road to a different community. And they'll be like, no, we don't do that, actually. We don't do that over here.
Right. It is. They are all different. And so it really is about finding an entrepreneurial individual within the community that wants to focus on conservation, that is a leader. And so what we do is we partner with that individual and they liaison with their communities. And so we act as a facilitator, essentially. And so when we do community meetings, when we first get started working with the community, we want to understand the level of tolerance towards snow leopards and other predators as a baseline. And so these are with community discussions. Everyone's gathered and sitting in a circle discussing this. And so we have these solutions that we know could benefit the community, but we really want to hear from them what their ideas are. And so it's even led by the communities initially, and then we incorporate ideas into this that are what's possible, that are good solutions that benefit both people and their animals.
Yes.
Wildlife.
True ownership, and it's much more of an assistive role. That is, this is what I'm getting from you, and that's fantastic, because these are the people, it's their lands, it's their livestock, it's their communities that are going to be most affected by these interactions, as well as those that would benefit the most from having these snow leopards around. They're part of the food chain, they're part of the environment, they do incredible work for the biodiversity in the area, and goes on and on. We've mentioned ecotourism multiple times on my show, and you have brought it up again multiple times during our session today, which I'm really thankful for, because it plays a huge role in the way that we as a society interact with nature and our expansive connection with travel and the natural world. Looking at ecotourism, particularly in snow leopard habitats, which are already quite fragile, how can it benefit both wildlife and local economies, and what does that responsible tourism look like? How is that done well?
Great question. So one of the best examples I can share is in Ladakh, India, in the Indian Himalaya. And so in the early 2000s, our organization was partnered with another organization there. And so it's our sister organization called Snow Leopard Conservancy India Trust. And they've been operating on their own since 2004. But what was started in those early years when they were working together was these original meetings with the communities in Ladakh, in a little village called Rumbuk. And it was actually the women's idea in the communities that said, I know a way that we can bring some funding in to value the snow leopards and other wildlife in the area. How about we create this Himalayan homestay program where people can come visit our village, we'll share the profits within the community, and we'll rotate who gets the business to make sure that it's equitable. And so people can come learn about our customs and traditions and then be here in the national park, the Hemis National Park, and get the opportunity to see snow leopards. And we can invest 10% of those profits into waste management and conservation activities like predator-proof corrals. And so this has been a thriving example, because now the communities there, it's called the Snow Leopard Capital of the World, because most people can go there these days and have almost 100% chance of being able to see a snow leopard because of the 20 years of efforts of and the how solid this has become for a solution for this community. Now, with that said, it really relies on the communities directly receiving those benefits. And so one threat to ecotourism is expanding this model, but in a way that's not equitable to the communities. So that could be outside bookings through, you know, large cities or individual private bookings that aren't really modeling that homestay program. And so, of course, those communities would receive an influx of people coming in. And so they would be able to sell goods and make money in that way. But we have to make sure that the numbers are capped and that people understand the ethics around seeing snow leopards. So that's keeping your voices down to not disturb the animals or not leaving a footprint. You know, we want to make sure people don't leave a trace when they go to these areas. We now have expanded this ecotourism program into Nepal and two different areas of Nepal, Annapurna Conservation Area and Dolpo. And it's being expanded by other conservation groups around Snow Leopards Range as well, with these ethics in mind, learning from the original example of how it can be successful and how we can do better as well.
It's ingenious, and it wouldn't have taken place had it not been for these local communities really advocating for what they wanted as well. And it shows us as listeners that ecotourism can be successful if it's done and scaled the right way. On that note, we'll be right back after this short break.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
UK Health Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Our Altered World. I'm here with Ashley Lutz-Nelson from the Snow Leopard Conservancy. We just touched base on how ecotourism can be used to benefit the local communities in a way that allows you to connect with nature as a visitor, but also benefit the communities that you are visiting that are directly involved in both the conservation and their livelihoods within the areas that you're visiting. Ashley, before our break, you mentioned that you found that visitors, when going to these ecotourism hotspots, have had 100% chance of seeing these snow leopards, which is incredible because to my understanding, and to what I thought was my understanding, was that snow leopards are extremely hard to see in the wild. So I guess what common myths or misunderstandings about snow leopards persist? Is that one of them? And how can we reshape public perception?
Yes, well, that's because of all the efforts from the last 20 years, Neil. And so in those communities, say in Ladakh, for example, the youth guides, you know, that are trained on ecology to monitor snow leopards. And so it's really about training the younger generation to be able to have income-related opportunities surrounding snow leopards as well. So when snow leopards are visible, they're typically from still about 2,000 feet away. And so we take ecotourism groups to trek along the same ridge lines and trails that they walk. And you can see sign, you can see scrapes, and you can see urine markings and cheek rubbing and follow their tracks and trails. However, you're more likely to be able to see them at a distance. And so the youth rangers are trained.
So take your zoom lenses, everyone.
Yeah. And also a spotting scope. And so the community members are trained on spotting. And so this is an income generating opportunity for them. And so in return, though, the snow leopards are safe in these areas from retaliation because the communities see their benefit ecologically, spiritually, culturally, even economically, you know, in these areas. And so the snow leopards are more visible in these areas, and because they're being spotted by the community members that are trained on how to do that and have their local knowledge, their traditional knowledge on how to, but then can also use scopes and other tools to spot them. And they all share the information. So when a snow leopard is sighted, they will call other groups and let them know as well to come join. And so from a distance, you'll have a large group, you know, from a long distance away, but everybody monitoring. And that collaborative, altruistic spirit of making sure that everybody has an experience to see this magnificent, sacred animal at the same time, I think is why it's been so successful there in Ladakh.
Beautiful. And that's so great to hear. On this note of tourism, so we've mentioned this even from the outset of the establishment of SLC, with reading a book to then going to the mountains to photograph the snow leopards. It's very much been a driver and connectivity and kind of people's connection with wildlife, with animals, with nature. Is there still misinformation about snow leopard tourism? And for example, with unethical photo traps and even relating to ecotourism, how do I as an individual, how do the listeners here who are looking to connect with nature, connect with snow leopards, who may want to visit these areas, how do they make sure that they're going to the right places, booking with the right people? And how do we also combat the places that shouldn't be doing these bookings and shouldn't be bringing vast numbers of tourism out, which are putting pressure on these areas?
It's a great question. And so we do have expedition opportunities listed on our website, snowleopardconservancy.org. But to customize the experience and really understand the level of the experience that the individual is looking for, the treks are and experiences are all quite different. And so they can reach out to us and ask, you know, an inquiry about, oh, I'm looking to go to Nepal in the hopes of seeing snow leopards, how, you know, best do I do that? And so we can set individuals up with our partners to go out directly. And so that's one way to vet the process. And there's other organizations working in the space that offer responsible ecotourism as well. And so how do we ensure that it's, you know, not happening in an unsustainable way? That's a great question. It's a major challenge because a lot of this, you know, since it is community led and making sure mm-hmm. that the communities are driving this. One way to tackle this would be working with the communities and bringing in other other parties and stakeholders that are working in ecotourism to really have a forum about it and understand how we can work together to set some best practices and guidelines in place that everybody respects and holds each other accountable for.
That is fantastic to hear. I was in Costa Rica last year doing some work with local NGOs, and I found out there was a lot of unethical tourism surrounding sloth tourism. People would come in to see the sloths, and it turns out that they had been taken for their mothers at a very young age, and then they were planted for photo shoots. And this was all new knowledge to me. I had no idea this was going on, and there are vast numbers of groups that are traveling out booking tours with these people. So it's a problem that's happening worldwide, and I think that we do really need to highlight this issue, that just because you're visiting an area doesn't necessarily mean you are doing it correctly in the best way to benefit the communities that you think you might be benefiting, or seeing nature in the best way that is actually a responsible way to visit those areas and interact with those species.
Yes.
With all that said, we've spoken about some incredible work that SLC has been involved in over the past 20 years. Rounding that number a bit down, what has been your proudest achievement in the past 5 years? It could be a specific population rebound or community success story. Or I know that you recently had a film. I'd love for you to talk about that too.
Yes, I'm so excited to talk about this. So we just released the Snow Leopard Sisters film. It had its world premiere at South by Southwest in Austin, Texas at the film festival just last week on International Women's Day. And
well,
this
done.
Film is phenomenal. I'm so excited to share this with the world. It is now released. However, we're still working on getting it to the wider audience through potentially a streaming platform or released in a more broad.
You heard about it here first, everyone. Well, second, but...
off the press news, exactly. And so this, why I'm so excited about this is because it follows one of our extraordinary partners, Shearing Lamu Lama. And Shearing is an indigenous woman from the area of Dolpo in Nepal. And this is near Shefuk Sindo National Park. It's one of the most beautiful snow leopard landscapes there is. So Shearing grew up in this community, which is a pastoralist community up in the high mountains in the Himalaya. And Shearing participated in a junior ranger program when she was young. And this was a program that was a sister park between the National Park in California and Shefuk Sindo National Park. And
yes. I've actually been to Lassen.
Nice. Yeah, it was a wonderful program by the National Park Service in the early 2000s. And so Shearing was in this program. However, the National Park Service lost its funding, which is kind of a similar situation to what we're experiencing now. And so Snow Leopard Conservancy picked up the program and kept it going.
Amazing.
And so Shearing participated in this program, and it inspired her to go on to become the first Indigenous woman in her community to get a higher level education, a master's in environmental protection, environmental sciences. And so Shearing is now leading her community toward coexistence. And so it's this area of Dolpo has about 90 snow leopards of the 300 to 400 snow leopards in Nepal. They're very endangered in Nepal. And it's the highest level of retaliatory killings by the communities, unfortunately, because they have not seen compensation benefits and they're living on the brink. And so the communities had resorted to, Shearing found during her master's work that the communities started resorting to retaliatory killings. And this deeply disturbed her and inspired her to take a bigger role in making sure that she could help her communities stop these retaliatory killings, to protect snow leopards and provide her community with opportunities like ecotourism and other livelihoods that are directly related to the benefit of snow leopards and other wildlife. And so this film is about Shearing taking a young herder girl named Tenzing, who's family lost everything to a snow leopard in one night, and she wasn't going to be able to go to school. She was only 16 years old at the time. She wasn't going to be able to go to school. She was going to have to enter into a child marriage situation because she's not going to be able to go to school, and they didn't have a man in the house. And so she hated snow leopards. And so Shearing said, "Can I take you on as my apprentice for 2 weeks and delay this wedding for 2 weeks?" And she changes her life and her perception of snow leopards in the meantime. And so it's about their journey together. So it's not just about snow leopards. It's about a coming of age story about a at these two sisters in the community of Dalpo. It's beautiful. It's such a phenomenal film. I'm really excited to share it with everyone.
What an incredible story of these life experiences that have been so profoundly impacted by effectively conservation programs. They started out through these educational journeys, which have then led to various levels of impact, both for nature, for communities, but on individual bases. It's stunning, and you've definitely sold me on that film, and I cannot wait to hear more about it and hopefully see it soon somewhere, hopefully on a streaming platform. That would be incredible.
Yes, I will fill you in when it comes out. And also associated with that, I should mention is that we're the proud impact partner of the film. And so we have...
As you should be.
We have together to work with sharing. And so one of the... You asked about, you know, one of the most important things that's happened is... So her community, we helped them build a large predator-proof communal corral for them that was their design, and we incorporated some ideas to even further improve animal health and welfare to it. And they built this corral, and so it's featured at the end of the film. And so the communities signed a snow leopard-friendly agreement to be a snow leopard-friendly community with the introduction. And so her mostly women-led herding community are all on board with learning skills and ecotourism, and they now have skills on wire weaving and all of these other things. And so she's really, truly a leader there within her community. And we're so proud of her and everything she's doing and very happy to support her. So we have a plan for the impact campaign to build 11 more corrals, train 18 more conservationists, and then provide fox lights, the solar predator deterrent, which was actually the first step in earning the community's trust, was to help prevent depredation before these corrals were built. So we're so excited.
Oh, just swells my heart to hear. Wow, honestly, it's incredible. Actually, I have so many questions for you, even off the back of that. I could talk to you for hours. I definitely need to have you back on in the future at some point, maybe after this incredible film goes out, and we can maybe even have one of the incredible women from the film on as well to talk about the work that they were doing and the impact it had on them. Okay, I'm going to go on a quick tangent here, because I would love to just throw in this question. If you could ask a wild snow leopard one question, what would it be?
I love this question. It really makes me think. Snow leopards are considered as deities to the communities that live amongst them. And I guess my question would be to snow leopard as a deity, what advice do you have for us earthlings during our time here on this earth?
Wow.
What wisdom can you share with us on how to be more peaceful, just, and protect you better?
That is beautifully profound. Wow. Well, yeah. Okay. I'm left a bit speechless with that one. It's gonna keep me thinking after this. I'll tell you that.
they are all individuals, Neil. And I think that's something that's always amazed me when working with the individuals. They all have unique personalities. They all have interests and likes and dislikes. And all of the wild individuals are just like that as well. And so I'd love for everyone to consider that. And our role really is protecting the individuals and then how that contributes to the wider population. It's all about taking care of one another, human and animal.
And that is a beautiful note for me to jump into what you would like the takeaway to be for the listeners here to remember about snow leopards, and where can they learn more about SLC? And I'd love to also hear your final message of hope for everyone.
Yeah, I am so inspired working with all of our partners that work tirelessly in some of the most remote, rugged, harsh landscapes of the world. I'm inspired by the indigenous cultural practitioners we work with that have this innate responsibility for Mother Nature and that work tirelessly to ensure that the next generation of indigenous youth have the opportunities to stay involved and do this incredibly vitally important work. So I am, and also the conservationists around the world, the part of the Wildlife Conservation Network, partner organizations, like we get to collaborate with all of these incredible organizations and individuals that are working to save these species. And that inspires me daily, working with these individuals. And we all have a responsibility in any way that we can to do what's best to make the world a better place for people and animals. And everybody can play a part. Whatever skills you have, we truly can use your support in conservation. And I really think that we will figure this out. We have the solutions. We just need the resources and to be able to implement them. And I'm truly hopeful for the future that we'll remember that we're interconnected and interdependent of one another. And just remember that it's all about taking care of one another.
And lastly, where can our listeners find out more about the SLC?
Yeah, we have a brand new website. Love for you to come visit. It's at snowleopardconservancy.org. We have all of our programs and initiatives and lots of information about snow leopards there. And we also have all of our YouTube and social channels and Blue Sky and Instagram and Facebook. And there's lots of inspiring stories, hot off the press news from the field and our partners. And we try to share as many camera trap videos, adorable camera trap videos of not just snow leopards, but Pallas's cats and Tibetan wolves. And we try to share hopeful and inspiring information on a daily basis with everyone. We also have an e-newsletter you can sign up for once a month.
Thank you so much, Ashley. And thank you, everyone, for listening to Our Altered World today. If you enjoyed the show, I'd love for you to visit our website, ouralteredworld.com, where you can join our community and find more information on upcoming shows. You can also find some of my work on social media at Flunking Monkey, FlunkingMonkey. And until next time, I hope you all have a great day.